Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path. All right, welcome to episode 2 of our blockchain and education series. This second episode, we're going to cover learner sovereignty. So how do we as learners take control of our own credentialing, the things we've learned, etc., and what do we do with that once we have it? So last time we talked about what a blockchain is. We also call it a distributed ledger. What those things mean. And I kind of gave an overview of digital property rights and how that kind of connects with blockchain, what makes a blockchain different and more secure than your typical digital any file that you might have, whether it's a Word file or whatever. There's a way to use cryptography, which is what blockchain is based on, to make these things more trustworthy, reliable, etc. And so today we're going to jump into what do we do with that now that we have control of our own learning. And as I talked about in the last episode, this could also be, what do you do with your own health data or any other kind of data? This always fits those two, but we're going to focus on learner sovereignty. But if you're into those other kind of things, definitely make those analogies to those other places, and even hit me up on Twitter and let me know, what other things did you think about when it comes to blockchain? How else could we use this technology and what's out there? So the way I'm going to cover this is we'll talk about, how do we have agency over our data? What does a digital resume kind of look like in this world? What are verifiable credentials? And what does that stack of tech look like? What are some companies out there that are going about this kind of thing? And talk about some challenges and then wrap it up. So agency over data. I'm going to use a couple different white papers that I've cited before. This one comes from Connected Impact. It's done through the American Council on Education and the Office of Educational Technology. And on page 9 of the paper, they talk about, what is personal data agency? For example, I'll just quote straight from here. When we think about our data that's out there currently, whether it's on Facebook, Instagram, if you use Microsoft products here at your work, you've got, or even Google, like those docs are on a centralized server. And yes, they're backed up multiple times, but that data could be changed, deleted, shared without consent. Somebody could take my file and go share it with somebody else without my consent. They could even mess it up or whatever, destroy it. Also, if your data gets deleted or a server totally breaks down, you get a virus, that issuer goes away. Let's say Microsoft disappears. Your information that's housed with them no longer exists. And that's a little bit scary. So when we think about our own agency, what blockchain enables, and I'm not going to get into the actual details of this, but essentially it's like scattering seeds all over the ground. That information, let's say that my information is housed on little packets all over the place in those seeds. One server going down does not affect that there are multiple copies of what I already have. And it's kind of a redundancy taken to almost an exponential level over kind of like the servers that are used right now to back up our information. So are the current servers we have safe and reliable? Mostly yes, of course. The trick is they're not tamper-proof. And that's probably the primary concern, is they're not as tamper-proof as something that's stored on the blockchain, which actually literally cannot be changed without proof of its prior existence. Also being there, you can see who changed it. You can't hide behind anything. So it's much more secure in that way. So let's just think about, like, what does that look like if I'm going to apply for a job? If I have my own badge, my own wallet, that stores my personal learner information and it's stored on the blockchain. I get to control that information. And it's similar to how I can put what I want about myself on LinkedIn or on a resume or whatever. The trick is, once all these ecosystems are put in place that back up where did my information come from, I can't really lie, because there's no way around the evidence that's on the blockchain. So currently, actually, this was from the blockchain in education. Let me find. This is the paper from the Blockchain Research Institute, entitled Blockchain Revolution in Education and Lifelong Learning, Preparing for Disruption, Leading the Transformation. This was written by Don Tapscott and Alex Kaplan. And like I said, if we can make it happen, we're going to get one of the members of their leadership team. Her name's Alisa Acosta, and she is their director of education. And I'm excited to have her on, and she can help dive into this a little bit more. But anyway, back to the quote I was saying about making up your own data. They quote a Career Builder 2014 study in which 57% of job applicants had been caught embellishing their skill set. 33% had lied about their academic degree, and 31% of employers had either rescinded a job or fired an employer for falsely representing their credentials. So employers are wanting more reliable data as well. And if we can't lie about it, as an employer, you know, when you're looking to hire the best teacher or whatever, or best engineer, you can trust, if it's based on this blockchain data, you can trust, without having to do a lot of extensive research, you can trust that this is legit information. It's verifiable credentials. So let's talk about what a verifiable credential is. And I'm going to go back to the Connected Impact paper. Actually, I'm going to go to a different paper. Now that I think about it, I got one with an even better example here. This is from the American Workforce Policy Advisory Board. It says September 2019 report called the White Paper on Interoperable Learning Records. And this is the first one that got me hooked on this whole thing. And so it's kind of the OG in my mind about where does blockchain in education kind of all come together. And it was exciting to see that there's research being done at a very high level in terms of getting this stuff rolling. So anyway, what they say when it comes to verifiable credentials, I kind of like this idea they have. They call it a four-layer approach, but I'll talk about first the three components that they talk about, and they use the postal service as an example. And they talk about a filing cabinet, but then they also talk about an envelope and the letter that we place inside the envelope. So let's talk about these. I'm going to post this as a picture on the Twitter feed, and I might be able to add it to the show notes. Still learning how to do that. Their image. This is figure three out of the paper. So they've got four levels. So at one end here, we've got, let's say, the customer that's receiving this. This is where all this gets delivered to. And these are the entities, like your schools, your training providers, your employers, or whatever. They're the ones that are looking at your credentials. So where does this come from? So the credentials are actually grouped, let's call it, in a filing cabinet, or for us, that would be your wallet. Some of you have maybe like a Venmo wallet on your phone. If you're into crypto like I am, you have a blockchain wallet for all the different cryptos, whether that's Coinbase, Argent, or something like that. But these house your credentials within them, and you can kind of group them how you want. And so that's the filing cabinet analogy. And there are pairs of these envelopes and letters that are contained within. So the next step is kind of like the larger piece, the envelope. The first thing you'd pull out of that filing cabinet, you have all the metadata about this credential. So that might be who issued it to you. So it might be your university. Who is the learner? That's me. What date was this issued? What type of learning was it? All of those things that go into it. What were the pieces of work required to earn this skill, etc. So that's kind of like your meta badge, the higher level of it. And then you go into the envelope inside of there and you get a little bit more detailed. So these are the contents of that envelope on the letter. These might be the actual credit hours, the grades you got, the competency level, which I think I accidentally said in the last, in the envelope layer, but this is actually belongs on the letter. Anything that kind of really defines at a deep level what went into that credential or that badge. And so that's what goes on the letter. That fits inside the envelope, which is, again, kind of like the higher level view, like what school did this come from, et cetera. Who gave you that credential? And when did they give it to you? But then if we go back down to the bottom layer, these are all the ontologies. Now, these are kind of like the protocol layers of the blockchain, so to speak. So these are all the rules that exist that make sure that these things are a legit part of a legit system, because anybody could say, I gave Ryan this badge for doing 15 hours of community service at Walgreens on three different Saturdays. That if we don't have a set of rules, anybody can really make a badge. And that's true today. Just like anybody can watch a YouTube video and say they learned something. Did they? Probably. But maybe we need a few rules in place to make sure that these are kind of, there's some level of rigor to earning them. So these are called the ontologies. So in this figure, they call those the occupations, skills, credentials, etc. But these are all the rules that go into how do these things speak together. So you might also think about if I have, you've probably, if you've been like me and you transferred, I went to a community, or in high school, I had community service or community college credit hours. And then when I went to the university or college that I enrolled in, they looked at those and said, well, we're going to give you credit for some of those, but not all of them. And so that sucked, because then I was set back for some of the credit hours I had already paid for and didn't get to fully apply to my degree once I went on to the next college. So I think that happens with a lot of kids that transfer, especially at the university level. But that could also happen when, you know, you say you had a welding credit at this one manufacturer, and then you go somewhere else and that next place says, you know what, we don't really think anybody that welds at that particular company is really a good welder. Why don't you come on here? But if there's more of a structure to say, you know, this, and this makes a legit welder, they can trust that. Or this, and this makes a legit English credit, institutions can trust those a little bit more deeply. And so that's what those ontologies help build. So that's kind of like what all goes into a verifiable credential. Once again, though, that's the filing cabinet. That's the, like, your badge holder, your wallet. The envelope is what contains the metadata. Where did you get this from? What date? The letter is all the big, deep details about what went into it. And then finally, those definitions kind of that provide the structure for what did it take to earn that at a very standardized infrastructure level. Now, the cool thing about this is once these things are in place, I think Connected Impact, their paper called these the ecosystems that are in place, they'll build over time. I think actually all the white papers that I looked at, they talk about that early adoption phase is really all we're into. We haven't even gotten into, like, you know, mass market appeal here. So these infrastructure pieces need to build slowly. But once those are in place, then I, as a learner, can control what do I do with this. Because, and I'll get into these as challenges later, but what's exciting about this within the verifiable credentialing is once these systems are in place, I think even if the learners are not taking them from place to place, this kind of forces, let's say I'm just saying as a teacher here, this forces us to be really clear about the kind of the rubric level, what does it take to really earn this credit from us? And I think that's really a good thing for us as educators, especially when we start to standardize those rules across the board. I think David Frangioso when he was on here talking about ungrading, and especially in his book, Going Gradeless. Excellent book, by the way. Check it out. They did intensive work on building rubrics for earning, we could call them scores or marks in their class as they're going gradeless, but how do you show growth? And so, you know, if I have those infrastructure pieces in place across colleges, businesses, et cetera, as that ecosystem builds, I think we start to have a lot more reliable learning infrastructure across the nation and across the world that helps us to also piece together our own educational puzzle as professional learners, maybe especially as adults, but someday I think for kids too, where I can, living here in Kansas, take a course from like some open course from Harvard, which I've done before, which is kind of cool, but actually get credit for it and know that that's a legit thing that I can add to my own resume, versus me having to justify to my employer that that is a legit course that I took. Once those infrastructure pieces are in place, it'll become much more trusted by everyone. And I think we can do a lot with that to say, awesome credentials, I trust it, let's go. So let's talk about a couple companies or endeavors that are pushing through. I got these out of the Connected Impact paper and then some others. So there's the Digital Credentials Consortium, if you want to look these up. There's one called W3C. There's also the Learning Economy Foundation. For those that follow the blockchain cryptocurrency world, there's also a company called Cardano. And they have partnered with the Ethiopian Ministry of Education and this other sub-project called Atala Prism, in which they are going to track the learning records of 5 million Ethiopian students and use that to catapult Ethiopia's educational infrastructure to a new level, which I'm really excited about. Once again, that company is called Cardano. I'm a big fan, so check them out. And then in the blockchain research paper, the Blockchain for Education research paper, they cite two different credentialing startups that earned some big money in 2016. One of them is called Degreed, which raised $24.5 million. And another one called Credly, which raised $2.5 million. So the investment money is coming in here too by outside investors that see blockchain work in education as a huge next step. Let's wrap it up with some challenges that are cited for what do we do to get from where we're at now, which is basically zero blockchain work, to that whole realized infrastructure. So a couple things that were noted are that, first of all, like I said, that ecosystem isn't built out yet. Systems aren't everywhere. Are they in spots? Yes. Like in Dallas, they've got the Greenlight consortium of various schools in the area, high schools, universities, school districts that are working together to give kids blockchain-based credentials. But even within that, as we talked to Corey Henwood, who I believe is in Utah or Nevada, forget where he's at, but he was saying it even takes the legislature level to move away from what you would call the traditional A, B, C, D, F grading system that can kind of open the gateway to thinking about our learning a little bit differently. So that definitely needs to be built out. There's also like just the technology infrastructure. There's a few startups out there, tech startups, that are trying to do this kind of thing, but there's probably not enough for that ball to roll downhill yet. We got to keep pushing it uphill. There's also recovery systems that are needed. If you're familiar with cryptocurrency, there's a saying that's not your keys, not your crypto, but basically that your badge that contains your learner credentials is 100% yours. And in order to make it, there's kind of a balance here, because in order to make it truly your data, you get complete control of it. Just like if you had a $100 bill that you carried in your wallet and it fell out of your pocket, no one can find it if you lost it. There's not a recovery system there if you go to like what we call a self-custodial wallet. Now, there are a lot of custodial wallets, but then you get back to that same centralized problem where, yes, I've got password recovery, but then I also give up some of the control of my own data. So those systems need to be put in place, and people need to be educated as to how do they interact with those. What is their choice? Are they going to do one where they can recover their data if lost, or are they going to go for one that is 100% owned by them, but they kind of take that risk? The last thing they mention, I think it's in the Connected Impact paper, is that with some of the things like FERPA in the U.S., which is essentially with schools when we have to deal with what family members get educational access rights to what parts of student data, that gets a little tricky because you don't necessarily give a kindergartner a wallet, a digital wallet to carry around their learner data. So at what point do you move from parents carrying that data around to the kid carrying that around? And how is that shared with the schools? How do the schools add to those records? How do parents add to those records, et cetera? And so that's another huge balancing act as we move forward. So that wraps it up about learner sovereignty. I think I spoke more about the underlying elements of what goes into learner sovereignty, but at the core, this is the goal of blockchain, is that it is your data. You get to do with it what you want. Now, everybody can trust what you share, but whether I share only my one college degree, or if I share two of them, or if I share none of them, that's all my choice. So what I share is my choice, but I also know that on the employer's end, they're going to trust what I'm sharing is legit stuff. And that's the huge advantage there, because we're kind of then free to move about more as autonomous individuals, where we're in control of the things we share with people. Not to be dishonest, but we just have that control so that they don't get to look into every aspect of our lives and, for example, say, well, before we can hire you to be a teacher, I need to also see your health records to see if you have heart disease. Well, in this future world where maybe health records become part of this wallet as well, I don't have to share that if I don't want to, because that helps also. I mean, if I'm on the discriminating end of what do I choose to share or not share, that also helps maybe give me a fairer shot at a job or whatever. Not to be dishonest, but it might help me get a fair shot, I think. So I think at the core, though, it's more about the modification or deletion of data. If I hold on to it, no one's going to mess with it. And it's immutable in that way and unable to be tampered with. So wrapping it all up, next week, we're going to keep diving into blockchain. If you are fascinated about this as me, definitely reach out or just look up some of these white papers that are out there. Once again, one of them is called Connected Impact. These are free online. Just you can find them on the Googles. And another one is called the Interoperable Learner Record. And the final one is from the Blockchain Research Institute, which actually had paired up with the IBM Institute for Business Value. And their white paper is called The Blockchain Revolution in Education and Lifelong Learning, Preparing for Disruption, Leading the Transformation. So check any of those out. I've read them all. They're great. If you know of one that I haven't mentioned, definitely let me know. There's another one I'll just mention because it's so fascinating. It's bigger than education, but it includes it. It's called Taji Kilimanjaro, T-A-J-I, and then the Kilimanjaro, like the mountain. But this is all about how blockchain could be used to revolutionize all aspects of life on the African continent, and its focus is very much Africa. It kind of ties in with that Cardano project in Ethiopia I mentioned earlier, but this is even a different blockchain trying to just say, you know what, we can help people in so many parts of their lives through blockchain. And I'm going to tell you something pointless here because I can't remember the title of it, but Charles Hoskinson, he's like the founder of Cardano, C-A-R-D-A-N-O. he has a great, it's a speech, it's not on a TED talk, but he talks about why these things matter, especially in developing countries, because there's a lot of things I think we take for granted in the US where, you know, if I have the title to my house or my car, I just have the title to my house and my car because our systems here are a little bit better, but that's not the case in a lot of places. There are places where if people leave, maybe they're a refugee, they will leave their homeland, flee something, come back when all that conflict is over, and somebody else has claimed that they own the house that maybe I've always lived in, or they claim my land, and I have no way to prove otherwise. And blockchain, because of its tamper-proofness, helps solve a lot of that stuff. And Charles Hoskinson talks to all of those benefits, and it's really fascinating. If I find it, I'll probably mention it on the next episode or put a link to it. So definitely check that out. Dig in deep. This is the future, folks. It's super exciting. And if you have questions about this stuff, hit me up on Twitter, because that's really all I use right now to communicate about these kind of things. I'm at Ryan D. Bartle 1 and also at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We'll see you next week.